Good evening and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio Live. Thank you all for joining us on the live video stream. We appreciate you being here with us this evening. We are not doing a Holzer's Ghosts this week. We are doing a paranormal roundtable. I've invited some of my favorite people in the paranormal field to come on tonight. We're going to talk about everything spooky, funny, weird, strange, and just have a great time. So I want to thank everybody for being a part of this. We're going to take your questions as well. So feel free to load up the comment section and be a part of the program with us this evening. I'll simply hit your questions. They'll pop up on our screen and our illustrious panel will be able to chime in and share some thoughts on what is going on in the world of the supernatural. I want to thank everybody for the love and support. As most of you know, I was gone last week to Florida to spend time with my bio dad. He was getting his second shot of for COVID. Let me give you a couple of quick hints because I've been talking to some tough guys. My son, Cliff, is a Minnesota firefighter and takes good care of himself. And that second shot knocked him flat. So what really seemed to work well for my dad was he drank a lot. Not liquor, water. He hydrated a lot before going in. He used an ice pack on the wound for about 2 hours afterward and then hydrated well for the next 2 days, and it had little to no impact on him. His biggest complaint was he took two naps in one day, and that was that's how it knocked him out. And that's a 75-year-old guy. So I'm glad I was there for him. I'm glad he didn't need me. We had a great time chit-chatting. And as you've been listening to my journey on the show, I got to see him do something really incredible. He did a full gypsy card reading for me and just broke out this deck, and it blew me away as he's doing this. Now, again, I'm a healthy skeptic, so I'm a believer, but I don't know about all the divination tools. But he's telling me these stories regarding the cards, and they're all lining up with stuff he would have no way of knowing. But Dave, he's your dad. How could he not know? That's a great question. But remember, he's only been my dad and a part of my life for the last year. So he does not know all the inner workings of my world yet. But it's pretty remarkable what he was able to tell me. And then at one point, after we finished this huge reading, he said, "Now, what's the one question you really have?" And he handed me the cards, and I shuffled them up and got them all ready and mixed them up and everything. And he took them and he pulled 8 cards off the top and then put another 3 on the side in front of me the whole time, and flips those 8 cards over and tells me the story of that question that I had. And then he said, "Now I'm going to tell you, for as long as I've been doing this, I can tell you that what this is telling me, there's only one possibility of what's in that 3 stack. There has to be a red ace, a black ace, and a 10. And I'm like, "Get out of here." And I flip him over. It's a red ace, black ace, and a 10. He said, "Yeah, because that completes the story." And it wrapped back into what he was telling me. It was really incredible. I also got to spend some time with my stepbrother, AJ, who told me some ghost stories. I'm going to actually work on an upcoming episode where I'm going to try to get my family together and tell ghost stories from the Clark side of my family. And that'll be pretty neat. They've had a couple of haunted houses with a lot of strange activity. So it'll be interesting to do that. But I want to thank everybody that sent all the nice messages and well wishes for my father. He did excellent. So whether it's your prayers, his amazing constitution, or everything I outlined for you earlier, he's doing well. So thank you very much for that. Tonight, we're going to do a paranormal roundtable discussion in a square box. So we're breaking paradigms tonight. Joining me, I will introduce each one independently and bring them on so we don't have a bunch of hellos all at the same time. A good friend of mine, a fellow traveler, researcher, author, and paranormal detective, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Mr. Greg Lawson.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
Man, you always have the best shirts.
You know, this shirt came from Kat Ward in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah, she was looking at the website and saw the zombie book and just out of the goodness of her heart, sent it to me. So thanks, very Kat. Nice.
Very cool. Well, Greg, it's great to have you join us today. Spending a little time, we're going to pick your brain about the paranormal, your investigations. But let's introduce this young lad, kind of new to the paranormal field, really just kind of green behind the ears, wet behind the knees, and he's new to this. So we're going to bring him into this so we can hear a fresher, newer perspective from this young fella. Goes by the name of Brian J. Cano. Brian!
Hey, is this on? Am I live? Wow. Hey, hi, guys. How are you?
Doing good, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Brian is also a fellow paranormal investigator, researcher with Scared. You probably recognize him as well from Haunted Collector on the Sci-Fi Channel, and a longtime friend of ours. He has always been a great go-to and a good calming influence in the paranormal field. So I knew he was going to be a great addition to this. Joining us also on the program this evening, Mr. Mike Huberty. And Mike is an author. Mike is a musician. Mike is a tour operator. As a matter of fact, if you want to see some of the best haunted locations in the United States, you're going to check out his website, which I'm going to show a little bit later. And if you go out, you're going to want to check out what they do, because they put a lot of time and thought and work into the tours that they do. And I've been on a lot of crappy tours, and we'll have some fun stories to share about that in a little bit. But joining us as well, Mike Huberty. Hey, Mike.
Thank you so much, Dave, for having me tonight. Greg and Brian, obviously, I've talked to before and always had a great time. And I'm just excited about jumping in some new paranormal topics with you guys and sharing the weirdest things that we can think of.
Excellent. That's what I like. And speaking of the weirdest things we could think of, now joining me, he's been a longtime contributor to Darkness Radio. As a matter of fact, he's been our Monster Watch specialist and has been on and off visiting with us for, I think, a better part of the last 15 years. He is a Bigfoot and cryptid specialist. He is joining us all the way from Pennsylvania, from some remote cave location, Eric Altman. Eric, welcome.
Hey, guys. I feel like I'm on the Brady Bunch here. I'm like looking up, and I see Brian looking up and down, and I got Marsha to my right and left.
We need one more. And
I'm more of a Jan than a Marsha, but I'll take the Marsha.
We need Tim as Alice in the middle.
Yes. Tim is at home resting, and I do want to throw that out there, so thank you for bringing it up, Eric. Tim is dealing with some more health issues with his feet. You know, Tim is a diabetic and has developed a wound on his foot that is not healing. And then the medicine that they gave him, he is having a severe allergic reaction to. So keep him in your thoughts and prayers. He's having a rough time, folks. But he will edit and post this show, and it will be available audio file on Friday, tomorrow. So thank you very much behind the scenes, Tim, for being there. Guys, I got to tell you, I reached out to quite a few of the prominent women in the paranormal field. And believe it or not, they have better things to do on a Thursday night than hang out with us.
Oh, my God.
Right?
It's shocking, Dave. It's shocking.
Speaking of which, speaking of prominent women in the field, you know, this last year was rough for many reasons. And we lost one of the legends in the field of the paranormal, of course, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who I think is touched all of us at one point from being at these live conventions and working with her and conversing with her. And, you know, you could feel that mark missing in the paranormal field. It's been strange. Brian, I know that you have worked with Rosemary a lot and talked with her. Were you shocked? Were you shocked when the news came that she had gone?
You know, it's one of those things where when somebody disappears for a while, goes quiet, goes silent, you wonder, I haven't heard from them in a while. I hope everything's okay. And invariably, they always pop up again, and you feel like, oh, I worried for nothing. And then the news came that she was gone, and there was just really no words. It was quite a shock. It was very sudden, too, because she was going through what she was going through. We all thought things were improving, getting better, and then all of a sudden, gone.
Well, I know, Greg, you were working on your second book with Rosemary, right there, Diaries. And she wrote to you literally just a few days before she passed. I mean, did you have any idea how bad things had progressed for her?
No. And the last time I saw her, I thought there was something different. You know, she was just as vivacious and exciting as she always is. And we communicated really well on the phone and through email. And we had 20 stories that we were going to do. This is the last book she actually worked on. Last book she published was Brad Blair's book. And when she passed, they wanted to go ahead and do the rest of the book, the other 10 stories. And I was like, no, this is what we did, and this is what it's going to be. So it ended up being a much smaller book, but it was a joy. She was a great mentor. Let's put it that way.
And you can find Greg and his books at authorgreglawson.com. This brings up, I bring up the death and the passing of our good friend, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, but I want to throw something to you. Doing the Holzer files, people are constantly asking me, do you try to reach out to Hans? Do you try to communicate with Hans Holzer? Do you bring him into the paranormal investigation? And respectfully, we did not, because Alexandra communicates with her father. And we kind of felt that that should be how it remains, that if he comes through, it will be through her. But at what point, and I know there's been a lot of controversy in the field over the last decade, there's a few people that immediately when a celebrity passes, they are claiming to make contact with that celebrity. There's still so much we'd all love to know from Rosemary. When is long enough to reach out to see if our friends that were as involved and as intertwined in the paranormal field, to reach out and see if they're there, to see if we do get a message? And Greg, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? You were very close with Ro.
You know, it seems like there's a shelf life on that. It seems like these processes, in my experience, they go into a fermentation. I will relate to alcohol all night tonight. So that's
as well. You should.
Me too, Greg.
There seems to be some sort of thing that happens before, and that things start happening, I guess, is what I'm saying. And so I don't know what mediums do. I just know that they add to an investigation like what I do, even in major crimes investigations in law enforcement. There's a way to use a medium to think outside the box. So I'm not sure what they do, but it does seem to me that there's a time period after somebody passes that seems to be a quiet time, I guess.
Do we, Brian, I mean, do you think that incorporating the deaths, I mean, we go to haunted locations where it's a hospital, it's a motel where somebody was brutally murdered or passed away unexpectedly, and it's okay to reach out to John Belushi or Marilyn Monroe or JFK, but we hear somebody like Robin Williams died, and within a few days, somebody's trying to communicate with him and doing it in a public way. Why do we take offense at that?
I feel like there is a certain modicum of respect for the dead that, unfortunately, sometimes our field doesn't always adhere to, and it's seen as a publicity thing, or they want to be the first. They want to be the first to contact them. And, you know, you've heard people reaching out to Michael Jackson, reaching out to Prince, reaching out to David Bowie, and you're thinking, well, did they take your calls in life? What makes you think they're going to answer you in death? And I mean, when it comes to people that you know, like, all right, like Rosemary, people ask me all the time, has she reached out? And not to me, but at the same time, I kind of hope, I'm like, she was so passionate. She was so fervent about her interests in this life, but she's got access to so much more. Don't worry about us. We'll be okay. Go be out there, be everything, and soak it all in. And when you feel like dropping us a postcard, well, we'll be happy to get it.
Mike, hearing about all the tragedy, I mean, you work in places like Chicago, Wisconsin, Minnesota, where there was gangland violence, and we're talking old timey, you know, cops and robbersy stuff. And these stories evolve. But then when we have these connections with people that are closer to us, you know, if you hear about a house where somebody died tragically recently, would that be something you would include in your ghost tours if the spirit is being seen in the windows waving or something, or is there a moratorium you kind of put on for, let's hold off on that for a bit?
That's a great question, Dave. And I want to say that I think part of this whole thing, because we've all seen that, like, the YouTube videos that go up after somebody famous dies. And they're like, oh my God, I talked to this person over the spirit box or whatever. And you're like, okay. And you know, it's going to get like 100,000 hits just based on the name. And then you're thinking that what's the process that we have in our society that deals with that kind of thing? That deals with how long is the grieving is okay. You know, that's the beautiful thing about the Jewish tradition of like sitting Shiva, or, you know, it's the here is the prescribed process for grieving and going through it and having the feelings and then moving on kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I feel that in our society is very afraid of death. And so that makes it difficult. And so if there was a prescribed process, it'd be so much easier to do it. And I tell you, a good example of this, Dave, is from Waukesha, Wisconsin, where it's very near the area I grew up. And Waukesha, Wisconsin had those two girls that stabbed their friend.
Right.
The Slender Man.
I mean, and Dave, that was the day after you talked about it on Darkness, on Coast to Coast.
Right.
And this, I'm not saying they weren't listening to Coast that night, but it's also the first time a million people in the United States probably heard of the Slender Man was that night.
Right.
So when you're talking about the introduction of this idea into the world, it happened the day before this horrible thing happened. And so I grew up near the area. I know the park where the girl was stabbed. And her family still lives in the area. And you have this thing where what we did is we just prepared a story. And we had a quick shift from it so that we could kind of talk about it, but then kind of go into shadow people's stories of the area. Because some people would ask about it, so they'd have a story. And then some people didn't want to hear about it. So you have to, if somebody asks about it, you want to address the elephant in the room and do it in an honest and... an honest way so that people don't feel like you're dancing around it, but also with great sensitivity, because there are people on the tour who might know the parents or the cousins or the friends of the people who were affected by something so bad. This happens in Minnesota too. We talk about the smiley face and the people that disappeared in the Mississippi River. And that is something where people might know the people that, and you have to deal with it with some kind of sensitivity, because you know that people are going to ask about it.
Right.
So you can't avoid it, but you also don't want to jump into. So is it a moratorium, or is it just a way of trying to be deft about it so that you're like, you know what, this stuff happened. And, let's talk about it a little bit, but let's not focus on it. So it's hard. And let's not rub people's faces in it when it's so still raw to the bone.
Right. Right. Brian, I know you remember this after 9/11. Everybody's, when is somebody going to go out and explore that area? When is somebody going to go? And you're like, my God, I don't think 25 years might not even be enough. What are we coming on, 20 years now? It's still not enough, and it just feels like this is outside of that. But again, when you look at these massive tragedies, are there stories to be told? Are these spirits reaching out? Should we be listening? That's what we've always asked, right? Is should we be listening? Eric Altman, Bigfoot situation. I'm curious, with the hoots, the hollers, the strange chattering and noises that you've collected through the years and that you've heard other investigators, have you ever put any thought on the fact that because nothing's being seen at that moment, that what you're capturing is actually direct voice phenomena, EVP of creatures that once walked that area, as opposed to living, breathing, three-dimensional beings?
We thought about that. It's more of actually hearing it audibly for mm-hmm. yourself rather than hearing it through the recordings, because we go back and we listen to the recordings to see if perhaps we caught something that we didn't hear audibly. And most of the time you don't hear anything. It's very, very rare if you do catch something that sounds out of the norm, but most of the time it's auditorily heard with your own ears. And I don't think we've ever caught something we might have interpreted as an EVP or a type of voice phenomenon. It's possible. And there are others who out there who speculate that maybe the what people are seeing, this disappearing Bigfoot, might be a spirit, in essence.
Well, I'm curious about this too, Eric. Obviously, when you're out trekking around looking for these hot spots and you're investigating day and nighttime, have you ever encountered something ghostly. I mean, a lot of these areas in Pennsylvania is where they dump bodies or people are mauled and you find them there later. I mean, have you ever had a ghostly encounter while searching for Bigfoot?
Not a full-bodied apparition, but we've seen ghost lights on many, many occasions that we can't explain, and they don't seem to have a source for where the light's coming from. And when you explore that area, that source is gone. There's nothing there. And then we leave that area and return back to where we were initially, where we saw it, and it appears again. That's happened to many, many researchers, including myself, on numerous occasions in various locations, you know, throughout Pennsylvania and even the East Coast. I mean, it's happening more and more often. So we don't know if it's a paranormal phenomenon that's intertwined with Bigfoot or if it's perhaps part of the same phenomenon. But it is something that's very peculiar, and it's happening more and more frequently. It's being reported more and more frequently.
Maybe it's just a flashlight tag game with Sasquatch out in the woods. I played that as a kid.
He's pretty good at it.
Yeah, yeah, he's very well. We know he's got the hide and go seek aspect of it down pretty well. I wanted to pick all your brains, and I know Mike, Greg, and even you, Eric. I don't know that I've had you do one special for me, Brian, but I've asked you guys at different events to tell me a favorite ghost story or a crazy legend and lore. So I'm going to kind of put you on the spot tonight, and we'll bounce around a little bit. Greg, you've got an interesting story, and we actually have a photograph to share at the end of it. So why don't we begin with you, good sir?
All right. Well, once upon a time, a friend of mine, named Dave Schrader, met me in Ireland, and we were traveling all over the place. And it's kind of an interesting situation because we're on a bus and everybody's talking about the next place we're going to. And somebody said, "Hey, we're going to stop by Lepp Castle." And I said, "Oh yeah, what's Lepp Castle?" And everybody looked at me like I was an idiot, right? Oh, you're the paranormal detective and you don't know what Lepp Castle is? This is great. You know, I'm like, what? I can't know everything, you know? And so they explained the backstory on this thing. And we went and we met the family that lives there, Sean and Anne, and they were very gracious and they invited us in the castle and basically gave us the run of the castle except for their bedroom and their master bathroom. So there's so many different stories about Lepp Castle that it's kind of hard to narrow it down. But it, you know, it has a huge, huge hundreds of years of history and hundreds of years of brutality. The chieftain that started this whole thing, basically, it wasn't unusual for them to kill family members. It wasn't unusual for them to get people to come help them go to war. And then when they won, they all came back and they would go into a big dining hall and they would give a buffet basically for these people that helped them out. And then after they would eat and drink, basically it was like the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. They would kill all of their adversary or all of their.
Spoiler alert, Greg. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, sorry about that. Right, the Red Wedding. Come on, Greg. And so, all these people that came to help them, they would slaughter them. And it depend on what part of the house they'd slaughter them, on where what part of the house they would stow the bodies. So there's a room upstairs called the Bloody Chapel, and they would take people up there and execute them. And it is a chapel, and the altar is on one side, and beside the altar there is a little sconce area, and then there's an oubliette in the floor, just a little hatch that you just toss somebody down in that, and they fall down in the wall, and it's basically a dungeon in the floor. And so when they did when they refurbished the castle at one point, they ended up taking a bunch of bodies out of this wall. And one of the stories about
there
it
goes,
is,
there goes the insulation.
Yeah, yeah. It's cold in there. And one of the stories is a brother. He's the eldest brother. The chieftain dies. The eldest brother is supposed to take over the clan. But the youngest brother was a priest. And he had everybody's ear, right? Because every Sunday he got to do some sort of sermon and do, his his duty as the priest. And one day he started the service before the eldest brother got to the service, which was a huge insult. And that eldest brother came in, walked through the bloody chapel, killed the priest, his little brother, on the altar. And so ever since then, there has been a ghost at Lepp Castle and many others for many other reasons. And he has wandered the halls and is often seen in on the second floor and in the bloody chapel. So when we got there, I spent most of my time up in the bloody chapel, probably 90% of it. And, you know, I had a couple of little gadgets and I was messing with, but for the most part, I was just trying to take in the experience, right? I was trying to pay attention to what was going on. I really didn't experience anything up there. It was incredible. If you go to Ireland, you can't go and not go to Lepp Castle.
I do have to say, though, yeah. Bloody Chapel's a little, I don't know, salacious. Let's call it what it was, the mostly dusty and cobweb chapels.
I have a picture. Somebody took a picture of me, and I have a million orbs around me.
What?
Oh, yeah. A bunch of people's grandmas, right? They all came to see how I was doing.
Well, just parts of their skin flakes, that's all.
Yeah. And so it was great. We go downstairs. We talk to Sean and Ann. Sean plays some music for us. We all gather down there. It was a magical day. Magical day. And we're all leaving. We're getting out of there. And as we're walking across the front yard, people are taking pictures. And Dave and I and Eric Folsom took a picture out there. And then we walked on. And a lady named Tammy Cote, or Tammy Cote, as I call her, she took a picture, and this is a picture she took.
Now, it's not real easy to see on this print if you're looking. I will post this picture at darknessradio.com under today's news banner, so you'll be able to go there and see it, enlarge it a little bit. But tell us where to draw our attention,
Eric. So Sean and Ann are out front waving goodbye, saying, finally, the Americans are leaving. And above, in the window above, when you really look at that photograph, you can't see it very good on here, but when you really look at that photograph, there's no better depiction of a priest or bishop standing in that window. And, you know, people get their rulers out and go, well, yeah, he would be 12 feet tall. Well, maybe so. Maybe he would be. You know, we don't know
how. This is the paranormal. We don't need logic, people.
Yeah, don't ruin it with, like, thought. You know, just have the experience. But that was an amazing, amazing experience for me to have spent that much time looking for the priest. And as we walk away, just randomly take a picture and a week, 2 weeks later, look at it. And there he is. So it was amazing.
Very cool. Very cool story. Mike, your tours are all over. You get to hear some of the best stories. You've had experiences. What do you want to share with us? I want to hear one of your favorite stories, either that happened to you directly or is a story that is just, you know, amazing legend to it.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to, we were talking about women in the paranormal that we really respect.
Right.
And so someone that is an idol of mine is Linda Godfrey.
Right.
And so Linda, I mean, growing up in southeastern Wisconsin in the late 80s, when I was like 12 and 13 years old, we had ghost stories on the news. You know, you would have the Horicon Marsh haunting of 19, like it was, that was on the regular news reports before it was on Inside Edition and the entire thing. And okay, cool. The next year, it's the Beast of Bray Road. And they would have like a picture of like a werewolf that Linda drew on the regular newscast. It's like, oh yeah, two more people got murdered in Milwaukee, and there's a werewolf in Walworth County after this. You're like, what? And so growing up, you're like, doesn't everybody have like ghost stories and werewolves on their news? That's not a thing? Okay. And so, you know, fast forward 5 years, about 1994. Now, I grew up in near Waukesha, Wisconsin, 20 minutes from Milwaukee. The outer burbs is where we were. And where I went to high school was this small town called Maquonago. And in Maquonago, we had a resort that was built in the late 1960s and was never opened. You had like a 300-room hotel that was built, but they ran out of money and they had to like drag the guy, the developer, off the property. Like the police had to come and get him. And eventually it opened, like they opened a golf course on the site, but you had an entire hotel that was built and never used. And so over Halloween, the local JCs would run a haunted house through that hotel. It was called Rainbow Springs. And it was beautiful land, beautiful property. Well, for the late 1960s or whatever, you know, like a beautiful place. And it just never happened. And my friends who would dress up as monsters and work in this hotel, they'd be like, this place is haunted. And I, as a high schooler, I was all into this. You know, I've been into this since I was a kid. Me and my sister, we were always like ghost stories, you know. Like we said, the ghost stories were on the news, or if John Davidson was talking about a werewolf on That's Incredible, we're going to watch it. So all into it. One of my friends is working at the Rainbow Springs golf course. And he's like, Mike, I know you like that ghost shit, right? And I'm like, I do. I do. And he goes, you want to go in the hotel? I'm like, I do.
Yeah,
I do. And so we're all, you know, 17 years old or whatever. And he's like, I got the keys. I can get you in the hotel. And it's wintertime. It's January in Wisconsin, which, you know, is lovely.
Yeah. And, right along next to Minnesota and Canada.
Right. So that sounds good. And I'm like, I want to check out this haunted place. You know, the newspaper reports said that the guy, the developer, actually killed himself inside the hotel. But that wasn't true. But he was dragged out of it. But they're like, oh, we brought a psychic here. And, you know, all the kinds of things that newspapers do for Halloween, that they said, oh, the psychic says it's haunted, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't care about that. I care with my friends who worked in that haunted house. They said they saw weird stuff. They're like, look, when you're hanging out here alone and it's a slow night, and you hear footsteps and your friends aren't there, you see a shadow walking by and there's nobody there, they're like, this place has something going on. Okay, I got to go there. We walk in and it's like walking in to life after people. It's, you see ballrooms, the chandeliers are up, and there's just snow on the ground, you know, like on the floor or what, and you're walking through, you walk into a hotel room, and the hotel room has the coaxial cable sticking out of the wall, you know, cause it's got the telephone line sticking out of it. It was built, it was ready to go, and it just never happened. There's beds, there's furniture, everything's there. And you're just wandering through it like it's some kind of post-apocalyptic wasteland. We're going through.
It is Wisconsin, so you're not too far off.
It is close enough.
As I say with my Minnesota Vikings jacket on as we talk.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens come September. But we go through and we hear some movement. And the guy's like, I don't know what's going on here. There's four of us. Me and another like ghost hunter, paranormal investigator guy, and the guy that works at the golf course, and then another dude who I knew through music, who was like just some nice bass player guy. He didn't care at all about the paranormal, but he was like, it's cool to investigate a old hotel or whatever, an abandoned hotel, and really amazing place. You could get I remember I took one of these brochures that said what the hotel was going to be, and it's like, oh yeah, 1,000 acres of beautiful blah, 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 all these things. And I brought it home and I hid it, but my mother found it. And she's like, how did you get this? And I'm like, I don't know. Sorry, Ma. She's probably watching. But, you know, as we're going through, it was like a place stopped in time in the late 1960s. And we hear movement. And the guy's like, not cool. And we duck into a nearby room. This room, there's no snow. It's a regular, like, hotel room kind of thing. But it had been, the snow had been moved. And on the floor, somebody had drawn a pentagram. And there was, like, fresh chicken guts everywhere. An animal sacrifice. Right? And I'm thinking, this is super lame because it's not haunted and it's just some kids. Some bored farm boys that listen to Blizzard of Oz and now think they want to worship the devil or whatever.
Right.
I'm like, this is lame. Stupid. But we still hear movement. And everybody's like, down. Because whoever killed this chicken where the blood is still warm, because my friend who was a ghost hunter guy, he was also kind of an idiot. He like goes over and he like goes, still warm. You know, like he's some kind of Indian tracker or whatever. And I'm like, oh shit. And so we all duck and we hear the movement and people moving around. And I'm thinking, look, if somebody's going to come here and perform some kind of ritual sacrifice, I don't think it's paranormal, but they are going to kick our butts. You know,
right?
Like we're drama kids or whatever. Me, drama kids, and the golf guy. We're gonna get wasted.
Unless like you want us to be beat up by a bunch of emo kids with Blizzard of Oz t-shirts on.
Right. Like, oh no, the metal farm boy is gonna have us for breakfast. And so we hide until we stop hearing it. And I don't think much of it, except that was kind of, those people were probably still there and that was weird. And the guy's like, I've never seen anything like this here before. The person that had worked there, he's like, and that was weird. We don't see anything else weird that night. Eventually the police come by and we have to hide, but we get home, everything's fine. Okay. A couple months later, I go to a farmhouse, this abandoned farmhouse in the same town. And it was a farmhouse when we grew up. You could see it from the bus ride to school. It was like a burned out farmhouse. You could see it from the road. And somebody told me, my sister told me actually, she goes, and she doesn't remember telling me this. She goes, that's a place we used to call the Gates of Hell. And the older kids do Ouija board there. She doesn't remember this now. So that means like she might've been just doing it to scare me. But 10 years later, I remember that. And I take my friends there. And I'm like, we're going to the Gates of Hell and we're going to play the Ouija board.
Sure.
We go to this place. We get into the farmhouse. The roof's gone and it's just walls up, right? So we get in. It's a beautiful September night in Wisconsin, like high 50s. We get into the farmhouse and in these walls and you can see the stars and it's far enough away from the road. You don't even hear the cars anymore. And then we go down, put the Ouija board. And then the same guy that licked the blood or whatever, he comes in and I'm doing a Ouija board with a girl that eventually would, I would date for a couple of years, probably to her chagrin. And he throws down a bone on the Ouija board and goes, here, use this as an antenna. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And he goes, bones. They're in the walls. Somebody had stuffed bones inside the walls of this abandoned farmhouse, burned out farmhouse. All animal bones, like cow bones, cat bones, dog bones. They were all stuffed inside the walls of this farmhouse. Once again, I did not think it was paranormal. I'm like, this is stupid. Like it's a bunch of kids who are bored, got nothing to do, and they're just throwing that in there. All right. A few years later, I'm reading about the Beast of Bray Road.
Right.
And when Linda was working on the research of this, she talks to the animal control officer in Walworth County, Wisconsin, which is 10 minutes down the road from where Rainbow Springs is, from where the Gates of Hell are, these places we went. And the animal control officer is talking about these, he would find animals murdered in, I mean, just like groups, like not just animals getting killed for food or whatever, but like a bunch of animals that looked like slaughtered and left in ditches in Walworth County. And he was saying the Beast of Bray Road was more than just some kind of cryptid, but it was something that he thinks people were doing sacrifices to bring forth. And the things that I was annoyed that they weren't haunted enough. I was at the site of a couple of different ritual sacrifices in the same area that they came about. So I don't know if they were related, but I can tell you it was, I mean, I was there and nobody, like, we just found bones in the walls. We found chicken blood and chicken parts on the floor. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys stop, you know, they got to stop listening to these dumb albums and not realizing.
Blaming it on the rock and roll music.
Like, and that's the worst part for me to do too. Right. But I still was like, oh, it's just dumb farm kids or whatever who don't, but really it was probably something deeper than that. And that makes me think the Beast of Bray Road was something more than a cryptid.
Right. And Eric Altman, this might have answered the age-long dilemma of why have we not found the bones of Bigfoot? It's because the Beast of Bray Road is tucking them into the walls of abandoned Wisconsin cabins.
I've spent some time out in southeastern Wisconsin on Bray Road, as a matter of fact. And yeah, that's one of the theories that the Beast of Bray Road was actually conjured. It's not a physical cryptid. It's a conjured creature from some other realm. And that's one of the pretty prevalent theories. It's been floating around for some time now. So
that's bonkers. Yeah. Well, we've got more stories to share, folks. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, guys, I don't know if you've heard about this, but people all around the United States and around the world are trying to get a hold of my package. I've been offering my package up freely for weeks on this show, and you can't believe how many people are willing to pay for my package. What's my package? Well, I'm glad you asked, Greg. Thanks for the pleading look in your eye. Here's a copy of my book, The Other Side. It is autographed, not by me, by some guy I pay underneath the viaduct over on the street. I've also got a Holzer Files card autographed and your own car decal, which does not look, I'm going to be honest with you, does not look impressive in my hands. So let me show you how it looks on your car. Ooh, oh, that's nice. You see that? You can't if you're listening to just the podcast, but for those of you enjoying the video presentation, bang, that's a good looking decal. So you get all three of these remarkable items. You get my autograph book, The Other Side, A Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. You get this right here. This is the Darkness Radio card decal to show your love. You get this Holzer Files decal. Normal price, $7,285. Order it today, $20 plus $4 shipping and handling. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. And say, I want to get a hold of Dave's package. I will forward that email on to my wife, as I do with every email that comes through with that in its title. And she will send you an invoice. You can get it taken care of. But Dave, I already own your book. And I don't like the Holzer Files. I only watch Ghost Adventures. But damn, that decal looks special. Well, I've got the decal for just $10. That's right. You can get a tinier version of my package for just $10 plus $4 shipping and handling. Just email me and say you just want the decal, and my wife will invoice you and get you taken care of. We have to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more stories. Eric Altman, Brian Cano next. Plus, we'll take your questions, and I've got a creepy tale to share from my archives as well. We'll do that when we return right here to the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. Thank you all for tuning in and spending a little time with us here. I am your host, Dave Schrader. This is Darkness Radio. My illustrious panel spread out before you. Greg Lawson, the paranormal detective. Brian J. Cano. You might recognize him from The Haunted Collector, his documentaries Scared, and just being an overall traveler and world advisor on all aspects of the paranormal. Plus, he has a haunted museum he takes around. Great guy. We've got links up for all of these guys on today's program guide. Eric Altman from Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society is with us. I hope I had that right. Is that right, Pennsylvania? But yeah, okay, great. Mike Huberty is with us as well. We're talking all things paranormal. We've been sharing some of our favorite strange stories. And since we just kind of came off a story that led itself to the cryptid world, or at least something not unlike cryptids, Eric Altman, you have the floor, sir. What is one of your favorite cryptid encounter stories, whether you've experienced it yourself or one that's been handed down to you?
Well, we talked a little bit earlier about these ghost lights that some Bigfoot researchers are seeing around areas where Bigfoot's been reported. And I had a personal experience. I've had several of them over the past 10, 15 years. And this one is a rather interesting experience that I still have no explanation for. I still can't tell you what caused it or, you know, what it was, but this happened in the fall of October, 2009. And we were in central Pennsylvania in a county called Clearfield County up on Rockton Mountain. And we frequented this area quite often because of the number of Bigfoot sightings and activity reported in the area. That we were researching that area pretty heavily. And it was probably about 11:30 at night. We were in the forest, and there was a group of about five or six of us, and we were all spread out on this gas well line, probably about 400 yards away from where our vehicles were parked. And we parked our vehicles on the gas well line itself so we could try to keep an eye on them, because there are kids that come through the area on ATVs and, you know, people that live in the mountain that, you see your car back there, they're going to try to get into it, you know, and damage or whatever. But as we were kind of standing on the gas well line talking and discussing theories about Bigfoot, and of course, there's always that, did you hear that? What was that? Kind of, you know, topic of conversation going on. I happened to look down towards the vehicles and I saw this orange light. And when I first glanced down towards the vehicles, I thought, oh, maybe somebody's down there is like walking around our cars, because it looked like somebody walking around smoking a cigarette and just moving around the cars. And I just saw it for a few seconds and it went out. And I mentioned to one of my research associates, Dave was with me. And I said, there's something strange going on down by the vehicles down there. It looks like maybe there's somebody walking around. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I just saw this orange light appear and it was moving around the vehicles for a few seconds. Then it disappeared. He said, well, that's kind of weird. We'll just keep an eye on it and see if it comes back. A few minutes later, I glanced down again and I see this orange light again moving around the vehicles. And I said to my friend Dave, I said, well, let's take a walk down there and just to be safe. We don't want to make sure there's nobody down there vandalizing or trying to break into or doing anything to the vehicles, because those were pretty much our only way out of here tonight. So Dave and I said, oh, we're going to walk down to the cars and see what's going on. So we began this long walk down the gas well line. And the whole time we could see the vehicles parked and we knew where they were. And we could see this orange light appear, and we're walking slowly. We had no flashlights on, no headlamps on, just walking in the darkness. And as we're getting closer and closer, the light was getting brighter and brighter, but it was still moving around the vehicles. In some points, it looked to be above the vehicles, above the trucks and the cars. Some points, it was down below them, like it was around the door side or moving through the front near the hood or the trunk. So again, we assumed it was a person walking around these vehicles. We got pretty close to it, probably within maybe 25 yards, maybe 15 yards, getting closer. And I whispered to Dave, I said, let's hit our flashlights and see if we can figure out what this light is. And we got close enough that we both at the same time hit our flashlight high beams on it, and the light disappeared. We could see the vehicles plain as day. We could not see the light. We couldn't see anybody walking around. So we walked up to the vehicles, and we were looking around the vehicles, looking under the vehicles, behind the vehicles, just making sure there was nobody around. And I looked at Dave and I said, well, there's really no source for the light here. What do we see? And he says, I really don't know, but we definitely saw something moving around these vehicles. And just at that point in time, we're standing there talking. My friend Dave's cell phone rings. His wife's checking on him to see when he'll be coming home that night. So he answers the phone and I'm standing there looking around. Dave's talking to his wife on the cell phone. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I get hit like a sucker punch in the face by the worst smell of... is a combination of cow and horse manure, and it was like shoved up in my nose, and it was terrible smelling. I was almost gagging, and I looked over at Dave, and I thought maybe he broke wind, and I'm like, oh man, that's just nasty. And I'm looking at Dave, and Dave's looking at me like he's blaming me for it, and I'm like, it wasn't me. And he's like, what is that smell? He tells his wife, I'll call you back. There's something weird going on here. So we're looking at each other, and there's this horrible, horrible stench that just all of a sudden hit us out of nowhere and then quickly dissipated. It was gone. And I said, was that you? And he said, no, it wasn't me. And he asked me the same question. I was like, no, I had nothing to do with that. And all of a sudden, as we're standing there, we hear this tromp, 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 tromp across the field in front of us into the tree line and disappeared. And Dave and I stood there and looked at each other like, what the hell was that?
So Ghost Sasquatch cut some pipe in front of you and then walked off, leaving you two to figure out which one of you farted.
Well, pretty much along those lines. But it was so peculiar because we had never seen an orange light like that before.
Right.
That was moving around the vehicle. So that was our first indication that something really strange was going on. And then when we did arrive at the vehicles, the light was gone. We never saw it again. It just completely vanished. And while Dave was talking to his wife on the phone, I was hit with that horrible smell. And then Dave smelled it and he ended his conversation. And then all of a sudden we heard something physically walk away from us.
That's crazy.
Into the tree line and disappear. And we were just kind of stunned. We stood there for about 10 or 15 minutes just trying to figure out what it was that we just experienced. And we were making jokes about Bigfoot farting and
right.
and all that. But to this day, we've never been able to solve the mystery of whatever that was around the vehicles that evening.
Apparently, boys will be boys.
Apparently right. so.
And we will lovingly refer to him as Gasquatch.
That's right.
Yeah, I like that. Very cool. That's a lot to live up to, Brian J. You've got a gassy Sasquatch story. You've got dogman werewolves in Wisconsin. You've got haunted vicars in the old Lepp Castle. What have you got for us?
Well, I can't say I've ever been crop dusted by a cryptid, but I'll see what I can pull from the old bag of stories.
God, if that's not the next title of your book, Eric Altman, we can't be friends anymore. Crop dusted by a cryptid.
You can use that. You can have that. That's free.
I appreciate that, Brian. Thank you.
You get that as a freebie. Well, I think my story tonight will be about a possession. It was a dark and stormy night. Actually, it wasn't dark or stormy. It was a cloudy, rainy day at Posttown Elementary School in Ohio. And many of you guys have been there. Probably some of the listeners and viewers know of the location. It's one of those places that has featured on TV. There have been events there. And it's a place that I love to go to anytime I'm in that area of Ohio. And this one particular time, it was an event. I can't remember exactly which one, but the typical things that came along with a paranormal event were present. The gym had been outfitted as the vendor room. So everyone had their tables, hawking their wares, pimping their groups, comparing black t-shirts and saying, okay, we're ready for the public to come through. And the doors opened and everybody looks askance. And we wait and we wait and nobody comes. So there's just a lot of us just kind of sitting around now. Rewind a few days. This is like one of those movies that says 3 days earlier. There was a post on Facebook about it. The typical things. Can't wait to see you. It's going to be great. Oh, bring this. Remember last time? And somebody had posted, bring your Nerf guns. And that was a very strange request, but nobody thought anything of it. We're like, okay. Typically, again, this is the paranormal, so it's bring your moonshine, bring this, bring that, and that's the typical. But Nerf is right. usually very far down yeah. on the list, if mm-hmm. on the list at all. So, okay. For some reason, don't ask me why, and don't make fun of me, Dave. I happen to have two Nerf guns that I had just gotten for something else. I'm like, well, all right, he wants me to bring my Nerf guns. I'm going to bring my Nerf guns. So
cool.
We set up. Everybody's kind of got their area and then everyone's being very typical ghost hunter, arms folded, everybody very stern, looking at each other, looking across the rooms, kind of nodding, doing the thing. And then the boredom sets in. And again, for whatever reason, this was not a well attended event. So we just had to kill time. And in this moment, this crisp, clear, pure moment, time stood still and went in slow motion as all of a sudden you hear and a dart whiz by my eyesight. Like, where'd that come from? Okay. That's all it took. One dart fired. We don't know by whom, but it was like something out of a mob movie. Everybody just came out packing. It was like The Matrix. Everybody running in slow motion, darts being fired, ammo being expended, people ducking behind and under tables. I don't know what was going on, but it was playtime in right. the vendor room.
Okay.
So finally, Daryl, the owner of the place, comes in. There were apparently people coming, and Daryl, in his very gruff voice, he's like, "Hey, everybody, people are coming. Come on, let's settle down." And we all kind of snapped out of it for a moment. Okay, people straighten the shirts, dust off. Okay, here's our DVDs, here's our books. We're ready to receive. And it was kind of we all felt a little sheepish because we'd just gotten scolded by the principal. So, okay, those people came through.
Right.
They did their thing. They shopped around and they left, and we were left to our own devices once again. And once again, the boredom, I guess, became too much, and another shot was fired. Now, in the interim, people had gone to lunch. People had gotten some food. There was a black shirt.
I just want to say, I am already jealous because I've never owned a Nerf gun that anything. It was like if it made a foot past my gun, I was lucky. you kids and your newfangled toys, you've got bullets going. Shoom, oh, I feel cheated.
Wait, it gets worse. Now, during the lunchtime break, there's always some friendly ribbing between groups and little kind of chest puffing between all the paranormal people. The paranormal group directly to my right at the far end of the gymnasium, they had gone out to get lunch, and they all kind of walked past my table like, I'll see you in a little bit. They all kind of gave me their friendly, like, all right, we're coming back. When they came back with their food, it also seemed that they had stopped at Walmart. And they could only be called cannons. This thing was ridiculous. Automatic, battery-powered, and they had bought auxiliary magazines filled with 50 rounds each to go into this monstrosity of a Arnold Schwarzenegger-looking cannon. And they had the shit-eating grin on their face as they walked back past my table and to theirs. And when that second shot was fired, that started another fracas. The first thing I thought of was, the cannon. And I looked over. And whereas all the other darts were, foom, 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 this one was, poof, vroom, vroom. And the plastic tip at the end of them, whenever it hit a surface, poof, 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 I felt like I was taking fire. So once again, we're ducking behind tables and literally we're hamming it up. And I had a crossbow and like a six shooter. So I was of no match to this thing, but I had to have allies and cannon fodder and, you know, human shields around me. In the middle of the room was this one poor woman who her vendor table had glassware, delicate, hand-painted, very elegant but brittle works of art. And you could see the fear in her eyes as she's defending it with her body, trying to avoid, like, taking shots herself for her art as it's, you know, the bullets are hitting into her and whizzing past.
Right.
And we all see it. None of us care. We're like almost using her as cover. I say, okay, we've got to make an advance on that howitzer over there. We have to do this. So me and one of my table neighbors were sneaking through the other bits. People, I feel like this is Saving Private Ryan because people are literally hitting the floor. They are done. They are out. They're dead. We flip a table over. I think Rosalind Bound was there. And I'm like, Rosalind, take cover. And we're having this little conversation as the bullets are whizzing by. Under the cover of this table, we're about to do some very hip 80s style maneuver on this and, you know, really pop up and pose when once again Daryl comes down. Guys, that's enough. We got people coming down. Come on, let's be serious here. Once again, we got yelled at. Once again, we feel very sheepish. We feel very silly. This had never happened before. This had never happened at another event. Dave, when we did Eastern State Penitentiary, it didn't break out into gun violence. But here we were in this gymnasium at this elementary school. And later on in the evening, we had our investigation. And because it was in a school, all the questions, all the attention was directed at children. Did you go to school here? Did you die here? What were some of your favorite topics? Et cetera, et cetera. And something clicked. Yeah, this had never happened before, and it hasn't happened since. Not only has the Nerf request not come forward, but we've never had that kind of behavior. And I was left wondering during the day, man, we just got yelled at twice. I feel kind of stupid, but what could, I guess we all just got caught up in the moment. But maybe it was something deeper than that. Maybe it was more that the spirits there at the school, maybe some of that childlike energy, even if it was residual, even if it was just a general feeling, we all somewhat got possessed by that energy that weekend. And we took on those childlike qualities. We empathically displayed what was there. So it's almost like they were communicating through us, because think of it. All right, what is a typical scene in a school gymnasium? Kids running around and playing and having fun. And that's what we did. We had a ball. Ooh, I don't even know if anybody showed up to the convention, but we had fun. And I call it the Battle of Post Town. And it was one of those battles that only took place over one day. There were no casualties, but it'll be remembered forever.
That story was brought to you by people who should go to rehab. Brian, that is cool. Right. You had that. You became one with the childish energy of the school.
Yes.
I like that. I like that. So here's the story I've got. And this is an older story. I haven't told in a while. It's one of my favorite weird moments. And guys, as paranormal investigators, we're often asked, how can we help clear a location? People are dealing with the supernatural. They've got things in their home that they're afraid of. They don't know what to do. And, you know, one of the biggest things that are, you know, is often recommended is sage, right? Now, I've always been of the mind, I don't exactly understand how a stinky wad of weed can get rid of ghosts. So it's always been kind of a question for me. But the story had come in, this guy, he and his wife had moved into this house. They had a little baby. And the wife felt like there was something really unsettling in the house. And she felt that it was centered around the kids' room. And the husband, you know, and I love these kind of stories where the non-believer has an earth-shattering moment. They're trying to deal with this. He's trying to keep them happy and say, you know, this is nothing. It's an old house settling. It's, you know, the smells that you're smelling are probably animals that died in the wall or up in the attic. I'll go clean it out. Don't worry about it. And this continues on for a while. So the guy reached out, got some help. They told him to try sage. So he's actually there. The wife, as he claimed, was getting on his nerves for the last time. And he's like, fine. I got this. He gets out the sage. He lights it, right? And he's holding it, still burning. And as we know, you're supposed to blow out the sage, right? So he's got it lit and he's sticking it in the room, looking one way while he's sticking it, and he's just kind of running it in circles. And it's getting smoky. He turns because the wife's eyes get huge. He turns and looks, and you just see this plume of smoke, and this face comes through the smoke and goes, and the flame goes out. And then the face back up into the smoke. The guy looked at his wife, looked back in the room, shut the door, leaving the kid in the room, and said, oh, okay, we need to move. Whatever this thing was, he could see it. He said it was like a Hollywood movie. It just came through the smoke and blew the flipping flame out. Now, guys, I've heard of ghosts touching, scratching, pulling hair, you know, moving things, poltergeist activity, stacking chairs. First of all, how does that make you feel about Sage having any kind of power over the supernatural when the ghost knows better than you do? You got to blow that out, buddy. You can't just let it burn willy-nilly.
That's a class 5 free-floating vapor. No thanks.
Vaporous anomaly, right. I know. We've seen that on Ghostbusters. Holy cow. That was, to me, that was one of the coolest yet, as a parent, creepiest moments. Like every hair on the back of my neck stood up. And he said they did. They had to call in specialists to try to clear the room. But that freaked him out. And he and his wife swear that this face developed in the smoke. So let's talk about that. Protection. What does one do? Brian, what do you do if somebody's really dealing with what they believe to be a malevolent spirit, not just grandma's ghost kicking around, but something terrifying to them or their family?
It's one of those things that anytime you're dealing with something on a negative area, you really have to look into their personal beliefs, because it doesn't necessarily matter what I believe. If they don't hold any value in it, they're going to dismiss it. It's not going to work. And I mean, this is partially psychological when you have something like a placebo effect, and not to say that protection doesn't have an effect, but the reverse is true, that if you don't believe it will work, it probably won't. So I would always look into their personal beliefs, do a little research into what can help. And more often than not, I've found that the answers, they kind of already know. They already have some sort of system of belief or something in place to take care of it. And if it requires something greater, then I know who to call to bring in some heavy hitting backup.
You're right. John Zaffis, not a bad guy to have on speed dial. He's helped me on numerous occasions. We had something affecting us when my daughter was very little. She would, as we're brushing her teeth, she'd stand on the bathroom sink and I'd brush her teeth and she looked in the mirror and she goes, "Who's that woman, Daddy?" And she pointed to the bedroom door through the mirror, and she could see a woman standing there that I could not see, but she could see it plain as day. And John had given me the, you know, information to, not for nothing, Dave, but you got to pray. You got to put out the holy water I gave you. And then not only do you put it on the bed, you got to lift the bed, put it on the box springs, lift the box springs and put it on the bottom underneath, because the spirits can come up through the bottom floorboards, which that's our nightmares as children. Something's under the bed, right? And these spirits are coming up through. But I did all he told me to. We stopped all activity in there. Eric, what do you do when somebody's dealing with a problem cryptid? What advice do you give on, you know, obviously you can't go out and flick holy water at Bigfoot. You know, what is the plan? Do you leave ribs nailed to a tree like Tom Biscardi used to claim? What's the way to calm the cryptid anger?
There really isn't, because you're not sure exactly what you're dealing with until you actually see this cryptid that they're talking about. But you have to remember, you're dealing with an animal. And animal behavior is very unpredictable. It depends on the situation. I mean, are you dealing with their home territory? Are you dealing with a food source? Are you dealing with offspring? Could they have young ones with them? There has to be something that's causing an aggressive behavior from this particular cryptid that's causing grief for a family. So you really have to look at the situation to try to diffuse it based on the behavior that it's displaying and why it's displaying that behavior. I tell people that if they're having issues, especially close proximity of their house, put up bright lights around their house. Bigfoot, for some reason, seems to stay out of the bright lights and it'll stay further away from the house in the darkness. I also tell people, you know, if you're having an issue where this thing is coming around and beating on your house, if you ignore it and don't give it any kind of attention, eventually it's going to get tired of harassing you and go away. I tell them, keep your pets inside. That's one big thing. You know, don't leave your dog, your cat out, because, you know, Bigfoot's going to come around, or any cryptid's going to come around, and you have a free meal right there. So there's a bunch of things you can suggest to people that are having issues, but until you really know why that the creature's doing what they're doing, why they're behaving the way they are, it's kind of a guessing game.
Is it a good idea to leave food for these cryptids? Because I've heard
no.
That can... Okay. Why?
No. Well, if you do, then you continually bring them in, and they're going to be expecting that food to be there. And the minute you take that food away, they can get pretty angry and upset, and then you got a bad situation on your hand. So I tell people that leave little trinkets out or gifts or food or whatever, don't bait. That's a bad idea, because once you get them used to having Kentucky Fried Chicken or a ham sandwich left out for them nightly, and they show up one night and it's not there, they're going to be pounding on your bedroom window. Where's my dinner? You know, so I tell people, don't leave food out for them. It's not a great idea.
You heard it here from paranormal cryptid expert Eric Altman. Do not be a monster baiter. You do not to be a monster baiter in any way, shape, or form. Leaving food and tokens out is only going to cause problems for you in the long run. I'm always trying to, you know, wrap my head around these different concepts of the beings, these things that we're coming into contact with. And as I said, I wanted to kind of round table some points. And folks that are watching along at home, if you have questions, feel free to throw them up and we'll try to get to them. But, you know, we're at a strange place right now. You know, during the middle of COVID, the government starts just kind of releasing news that, yeah, we have footage. That was real footage of UFOs, and we don't know what it is. And, that task force we said that we got rid of 20 years ago is still around and investigating UFO claims, or UAP claims now, right? We call them unidentified aerial phenomena. So you've got that. We've got this disclosure. There's pictures, Eric Altman, probably some of the most compelling weird pictures from Loch Ness that have been seen in years. That defy any kind of logic or explanation for me. Mike, you know this. There's visions of werewolves and vampires, people claim, here in the United States. They're seeing. Now you kind of wave off. What's your thoughts on this, Mike?
I wasn't trying to wave it off. Things are going on that, like when the government comes in, like, oh yeah, hey guys, UFOs are real. The old CIA director is like, yeah, there was some stuff. Like, part of it might be authentic unidentified flying objects, but part of it also might be, and I talked about this with Robbie Graham, who wrote a great book called Silver Screen Saucers. He's done a lot of research in the field. Part of it might be that there's no longer a Cold War. The United States is no longer against an enemy like the Soviet Union with an unlimited budget. You know what I mean? Like, so if the plane manufacturers and the tank manufacturers and all the people, they want to say like, okay, why should we invest $150 million in 10 new, like when you talk about planes that cost $30 or $40 million a piece, who do we got to fight? Okay, the Soviets, they're not the same. The Chinese do not have our level of technology, at least militarily, but they have a lot of people, whatever. But if you need the new technology, who do you need to fight? Oh, yeah, it's Independence Day out there. So we need that kind of stuff. So when I see the New York Times talk about UAPs, I've talked to the people who are writing the stories and everything, and you're like, okay, I want to believe. I'm like, beam me up, fucking Scotty, I'm in, guys.
Right.
But I see all this stuff, and then it's like, okay, who's giving us this? These things, it's the military. Why would the military care about the Tic Tac so much? Because now it's something new they have to take on. And if it's an enemy that has no limit, then it's a budget that has no limit. So I worry about the things in that way. But
So you're saying from a skeptical point of view, you're questioning the authenticity of what they're releasing to us so that they can justify creating bigger and better toys to combat said vehicles.
Oh yeah, like
interesting.
They're not bringing on, like, they're not talking. It's not like Whitley Strieber. He's like, oh yeah, they want to bring on soul restoration, and they want to show you reincarnation in a beautiful place and stuff. They're just like, nope, the enemy's in the skies and it's aliens. And we got to make sure the Earth stood still doesn't happen.
Greg, we've had a lot of conversations regarding UFOs. What do you make of Mike's thought on this? You're former government or military. You're a law enforcement official. You're a paranormal detective. What do you make of this assertion that it's more a game to be played in order to validate the expenditure of money to make bigger and better weapons?
The history of our government, we would automatically assume that, right? I mean, they have a history of not telling us the truth and manipulating the facts and that sort of stuff.
Allegedly.
I was an operations specialist in the Navy. In other words, I did air detection and tracking. And I got to see some electronic phenomenon on my instruments that didn't make any sense to me. And my uppers behaved in a different way than they behave during a normal contact information or tracking information. So there are obviously secret things that are going on. And I was on Nimitz prior to this last Tic Tac thing. That's where I was stationed. And so I have some experience and I'm privy to certain types of information that does not correlate with what they're releasing now. I'm currently working with Beyond the Fray Publishing on a new Roswell book. I know you say a new Roswell book. It's like, what do you got new? Well, it's just a different way to look at it. And so, the investigations that the military has done so far, like the Roswell report, those guys would have been fired if they would have been working a major crimes case with me and did their investigation and their interviews the way they did it. Completely unsatisfactory. Those guys would be gone. They were approaching it much more like a espionage case than a fact-finding case. And so, I don't trust any of them.
Wow. Well, it's something to consider. We have a couple of questions here. Did you have something you wanted to weigh in on there, Brian, before we jump into this question?
Well, I just feel that within anything in the paranormal, be it cryptids or especially this UFO situation, just because one situation could possibly explain it, it doesn't necessarily mean that is the sole explanation. So could it be the government? Yes. Could it be extraterrestrials? Yes. Could it be all these different things? And one thing that, and again, I don't want to get political about it, but somebody all of a sudden decided that we needed Space Force. And it was very much in character for us to be first in space. Well, why? It's usually because someone or something needed to be behind us. And I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that before. Okay, maybe.
All right. Here's a question from Gina. What are disembodied voices and where do they come from? Could it be an interdimensional thing? In Connecticut, I experienced several times a very projected, disembodied, loud and angry voice, but it almost didn't sound human. It projects almost like a radio being turned from low to high in volume. So EVP or DVP, direct voice phenomena, for listeners that don't know, direct voice phenomena is where you hear the voices out loud. You don't need a recorder to experience that. I've had that happen. And then EVP, electronic voice phenomena, it's the auditory remnants we capture on a recording device. The jury for me is still out, guys. I'm not sure what we're getting or where we're getting it from. If it's something we're mentally projecting onto an electrical device because we are a magnetic force as well, and we have certain perceptions, thoughts, and ideas, or are we capturing the true voices of the dead, or are we capturing frequencies from nearby or parallel universes from spirits that are there still walking just one page ahead of us? I'm not sure, but you know, Mike, what's your thoughts on this? Is that something that intrigues you?
Oh man, EVPs. Like I love getting them. I love listening to them. I love getting them before somebody tells me what they are. Right. That's a big one. When I see the thing on the screen before the EVP comes out, I'm like, why did you poison my head?
Yeah.
But I love listening to it, hearing it, and then somebody saying, I heard that. and then agreeing on it. Now that's something special. There was just a great article shared by the Society for Psychical Research this week talking about EVPs as discussion with sleeping people.
That's fascinating to me, and I'll explain why. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so this idea that when we're trying to communicate, and this is this idea that we trap ghosts in the thought of that they are dead consciousnesses still rolling around. Instead of thinking, okay, we're hearing something that's not physically oriented, that is different, that we can't explain, and we're just associating with this idea that dead people are still hanging around a place. Like, oh yeah, this is the ghost of the janitor who loves coming back to work 150 years after he died. Yeah, the guy that made like $2.65 an hour wants to mop your barf every day until doomsday. Give me a break. But is there something else there? Could we be talking to someone else? You know, this is Stanley Krippner and his Dream Institute, the Maimonides Institute in New York that he worked on in the late 60s, where they tried to do these experiments with all these people at Grateful Dead concerts talking to sleeping people at their institute. This idea of like, we're going to send this person an image. We're going to send this person a message. Like, can that person send a message back? And so this idea that EVPs are, okay, could they be ghosts? Absolutely. Could they be aliens? Could they be demons? Sure. Could they be like a consciousness that's just not awake, you know, that's not around? Absolutely. So, I mean, the stuff that we hear, is it real? Yeah, because you hear voices on those recordings, 1,000%. I'm with you. And I've heard my own, and I've seen shit, man. We've all seen shit, right? We've all been there.
Yeah.
That'll turn you white.
That's right, Winston. But that's the thing. Like, what is it? And that's what we're all trying to find out. So that's what makes it exciting. And I think we should not just stick to one explanation. We should open it up and go like, okay, we heard something. What could it be? And that's what makes it fun.
I like that concept of is it the sleeping or people in comas, medical conditions, right? Is that what maybe part of this is? And they're looking to make communication. We hear about these out-of-body, near-death experiences where the soul is outside. I've often wondered in moments of sleep paralysis, have we awoken physically too quickly because we were astral projecting? And the reason that we feel that oncoming presence, that sense of something coming towards us that freaks us out, is because it's actually our soul getting closer to actually re-entering the body. But because physically and spiritually, we don't see the golden line or the silver strand, we're just... every horror movie machination starts to run in our mind, and we're freaking out, and then they connect with us finally. So it's an interesting concept of what is it that we're really coming into contact with. And an interesting question here. Let me pop this one up. Why do some of us get all modalities, spirit, ghosts, ET, cryptids, et cetera, et cetera? Let's start with you on this one, Eric. Why do you think some people are more adept at seeing and having these experiences than you? You go out trying. Billy Bob has it every weekend. You're trying, but not getting the same kind of communication. What's going on there?
I wish I could answer that. I really do, because if I could figure out why certain people are doing it or who's going to have that ability, I'm going to hang around those people because I want to see it myself. I honestly don't know why some people continue to have multiple sightings and encounters and hearing things. And like you said, I've been going out for almost 24 years now, and I've count on both hands the number of times out of 24 years that I've had something weird happen. But people go out twice and have something happen twice. I don't know. It's fascinating to me. Maybe they have some kind of open third eye, if you will, or something like a, I guess the word would be like a psychic ability to tap into something that we don't, kind of like the psychic mediums have. Right. I really don't know, but it is fascinating, and it's really interesting to see these people experiencing it because they're not lying about what they're dealing with, and you know, not making it up. So it does happen.
I've had experience. I've seen what I believe was a Bigfoot. I've seen a UFO. I've seen ghosts. I've had psychic phenomena happen around me. So I think there is something to that. Just, I don't know about the whole voodoo word of vibration. Are we really in a different vibration that allows us to see this, or are we, predestined to have these experiences because that's what we signed on for in this life? There's so many different levels, and maybe it's best, like Mike said, why do we need one answer to fully explore this when it could be so many different things taking place at once?
When you're talking about that, I think it has a lot to do with classical conditioning. Once you're 4 or 5 years old and you start asking some decent questions, parents and people around you say there's no such thing as monsters, there's no such thing as ghosts, there's no such thing as this, that can suppress whatever it is that I believe we all have. Something that is this intuitive thing, this gut instinct, this woman's intuition or whatever. And whether we pay attention to it more or not is up to how you were raised and your perceptions. Jessica Potter, the medium, she teaches classes on that, like a lot of other people do, as far as to help you open up your perspective of your experiences. So I think it's probably something that's in us to begin with. We suppress it, and other people feel freer to listen to it and pay attention.
The last thing I want to kind of throw out to you guys, and if you want to follow Greg, you can find more information about him at authorgreglawson.com. The IR spectrum is very popular in the world of paranormal ghost investigating and Bigfoot. You've got the trap cameras that use IR. You've got the ghost cameras that use IR. The big question that's thrown out quite often is if these animals can see in IR, if the spirits are in the IR spectrum, wouldn't the IR light essentially wash them out and make them impossible to see? Or maybe, you know, or if the ghost is looking and trying to stay stealthy, if it sees one room lit up, is it going to go in there? Eric, what do you think? I mean, that's been a big hot debate, that Bigfoot seems to be able to sense the lighting frequencies and everything. Do you believe there's something to that? And what's the fix?
Well, we don't know what truly Bigfoot can see and can't see. Unfortunately, we don't have an answer that we can say, hey, what are you looking at today? Can you tell me what, you know, this light is and what you see in this?
It's like, all speculation. I can't see in the UV spectrum, but the IR has always been really easy for me to tune into.
Exactly. And, right. There's a lot of theories about game cameras and video equipment that may give off IR light. And I use an infrared camera, a viewing monocular that I use, and I use an infrared booster to help see further. And maybe they see that and they stay away from me when I'm out in the field. Maybe they can see that light. And just like you said, that like a ghost doesn't want to go in that room because they see that brightness and they want to avoid it. We really don't know what they can and can't see, but it's been speculated for quite some time that the reason we put game cameras out, we never get a picture, is because Bigfoot can see that IR light coming off of the game camera and they avoid it. And that's just a guess, to be honest with you. No one really knows. And I think until we get to that point where we can actually study one and maybe even have a live corpse where we can, or not a live corpse, but a live being where we can, you know, study its eyesight and what it can and can't see, or even a dead one, we could take the eyes out and study the eyes. And that's the only way we're going to ever really know. It's just a lot of guessing and a lot of speculation at this point why we can't capture a good picture of Bigfoot.
It'd be interesting, you know, if you have an area that you know Bigfoot is prevalent in, what if you lit up one area with IR cannon lights shooting in and you were on the other side of the woods, so that if it is trying to avoid it, would it flush them towards you?
That's a great idea. And to be honest, I've never thought of something like that before. We've never really said, hey, let's set up a test area, do all the lights here, make all the noises, all the sounds over here, and see if something reacts over here. That's a really good idea and something we're probably going to have to try very soon.
Because I've always joked right about it with you. How do you know that it's not two different opposing Bigfoot hunting teams in the woods and you're exactly. whacking at a tree and their team's like, that's Bigfoot, whack, 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 and they're responding and you two are just whoop, whoop out into the wilderness doing the same thing.
Right.
The IR lights, do you put much stock into the IR visual spectrum, Brian, for capturing ghost phenomena?
I feel like in the last decade, we've been spinning our wheels. We're going through the motions. I feel not a lot of new ground has been covered. And when it comes to things like EM pumps or IR lights, I don't know. We might be missing the mark. And this might completely reverse that. But one example I can think of, I had been at an event. Someone was using dowsing rods and they said, oh, this person is great at it. They can find lost things. They could play hide and seek. Oh, look, just before you came in, they were pointing with them, identifying different things in the room. Now, the person using the dowsing rods supposedly was being guided by spirit. So I said, okay, I'm understandably skeptical. So let's run this through a few trials. The person was blindfolded. The room was dark. I said, okay, I'm going to move about the room, have the person track me. So it's myself, the dowser, and a third party. As I'm moving around the room, the person is using a flashlight to kind of just so they could see where I am. And I'm thinking, well, maybe they could see the light underneath the blindfold. Maybe something's going on. So we further obscured their vision. So once we were satisfied that, yes, this person couldn't see past the blinds, I moved about the room. And it seemed like the dowsing rods were tracking me. And I'm thinking, like, well, that's too bright. All right, try just the red light on the MEL meter. The minute the red light was used, the dowsing rods almost like stopped as if a power cord were pulled from them. And I'm thinking, well, all right, the red light. Is it that the red light that they can't see, they can't perceive, that's outside what is being used? Now, yes, of course, this could just be a person that didn't have the benefit of a full light tracking me, but we use different lights, lower lights. The only one that didn't seem to yield results was a red one. And again, it made me think that everything we're using, everything we're doing, I love the TV shows. I'm on one of the TV shows. You're on one of the TV shows. A lot of people imitate what they see. So I want to see something different that's just not the gimmicky thing of the week. And I want people to really start thinking like, okay, well, we use EM. Why? Why do we do that? Maybe we're detecting the wrong thing. Maybe we should be looking into the gamma spectrum. Maybe we should be looking at some other kind of radiation. And we're no closer. So I guess to answer your question, my official answer is I don't know.
But the important thing is never stop searching. And that's never. How you can find Brian. NeverStopSearching.com. That is his web place to check him out. Again, for our good friend Eric Altman, if you're interested in learning more about cryptids, follow along on his journey, www.pabigfoot.com. And I know when COVID is gone and things are under control, Eric does quite a few Bigfoot hunts, public Bigfoot hunts and such. Eric, is there anything you'd like to plug before we say goodbye, my friend?
Other than thanks for having me on tonight, it's been great to see everybody and to talk with you again, Dave. It's been a long time. And just everybody keep staying safe because we still got a lot to do.
Very cool. Eric Altman, PABigfoot.com. As I said, our good friend Brian J. Cano can be found at NeverStopSearching.com. And Mr. Mike Huberty, as we're heading out, American Ghost Walks, where are you located? How can people find you? Are the tours going in the current situation we're in?
Yes, we do safe, socially distanced tours throughout the Midwest. We're starting up in Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis, San Juan, Lahaina in Maui, and all through the Midwest and a couple of different further on locations, which you can go to if you're in the Midwest, if you're in the winter. But right. Now we're coming out. We are going to be going crazy in the Midwest in Chicago hauntings as well as American Ghost Walks in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and looking forward to ghost hunts and haunted history and just finding ways to make these cities exciting and make people feel connected to the cities they may live in or visit in the Midwest. You know, one thing that I've discovered in the time of doing haunted history tours is that people don't understand how awesome their own hometowns can be. And so that's what we are looking forward to doing for people this year and showing you the weird where you grew up.
Very cool. Check them out. AmericanGhostWalks.com. And you, my good friend and compatriot, travel partner, Greg Lawson. Always good to see you. Hopefully we'll be back on the road in 2022 doing Scotland and some of the other fun places. Author GregLawson.com is the website. I know you said you're working on a new book with Beyond the Fray Publishing. What else is going on that you can alert people to?
Haunted History, Haunts and Legends in Jefferson, Texas is coming up on the 17th of this month. And that's always a lot of fun for those of you who might be in Texas, Louisiana, or maybe Arkansas. It's a great time over there. Other than that, Dave, I think I will be seeing you in Michigan, right?
Yes, Michigan Paracon. And we've got a lot of great big conferences coming up. You can check out at darknessevents.com. And you can get your tickets now for most of these events coming up in the latter part of 2021 and already into 2022. We are booking and getting things taken care of. Brian, is there anything coming up for you that we should promote and let people know about?
Yes, please. In just under 2 weeks is going to be the 2021 second leg of my History of the Paranormal mobile exhibit tour. I'm going to be showing at the Oliver House in Middleborough, Massachusetts. And the tour is about the history. So it's education, but it's entertainment as well. So there's a haunt portion to it. You could get tickets at my website. And please come on out, support the house, support the exhibit, and hope to see you there.
That is so cool. Folks, we're just about a week and a half away from the Polar Plunge. My son is doing the Polar Plunge to help Special Olympics. We're hoping to cross over that $5,000 threshold. Chris Jericho, professional AEW wrestler, just donated $1,000, putting us even closer. We were hoping to hit 10 grand this year. We know a lot of people are out of work or deeply impacted by COVID. But if you have it in your heart to make a donation of any size, 1, 5, 10, 20, $100, you can do so. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I'll send you the link. But what I'm going to do, I was going to put this up a couple weeks ago. I got distracted because of what's going on with my father. This is the other little haunted doll that I had aboard the Queen Mary that we used as a trigger object in the pool area for Jackie. Our other doll that we put up for auction ended up selling for $650 for the Jackie doll. That goes to good God. I feel horrible now. His name is totally Jeremy Jones. Jeremy Jones. Thank you so much. I'm going to put this up after tonight's show. It'll be up on my Facebook page. If you'd like to get Minnie and you'd like to have this little ghost, you can, this little doll, you can see her on the episode. She's briefly there. You see her laying on the floor next to Jackie. But she was aboard the Queen Mary with us. We brought it, one of the haunted dolls that had been donated to me a while back to use as a trigger object. So, if you'd like, every dollar that we raise on this is going to go to the Polar Plunge. So what you'll do is go to my Facebook page, find the doll, place a bid. I don't want you to post anything else. Don't say, oh, too expensive for me. Oh, I don't want haunted dolls. Just shut up and bid. And then the highest bid in a couple of days will win this doll. I'll ship it out to you with an autographed Holzer Files card as well. And get that out to you. Then all you have to do is I'll send you the link. You go make the donation once we've agreed on what your donation is for this. And that money will go to help with Special Olympians for their training, their travel expenses, and for the work they do. So that's going on. Thank you, gentlemen, all for joining me. This was a lot of fun, and I'd love to have you guys back and do this some more in the future.
I'm down.
Anytime.
All right. Well, absolutely. That's it. Thank you all for tuning in and being a part of our world. Have a safe and happy weekend. And remember to enjoy every moment because it could be your last. Ooh, that's a dark, depressing way to go out of this. But it's also an important key element you have to remember. Treat everybody like this may be the last time you see them because they deserve that kind of love and respect. Take care, everybody. We'll see you again next week right here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. And keep Timmy D in your prayers. This is Darkness Radio.